Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, hanging out again with the old, bold pilots in Oceanside, California. Over the weeks ahead, you'll hear from veterans in Colorado, New Mexico, Nevada, California. You'll hear some pretty remarkable coincidences and some little-known history that'll be in store for us. But this time, a second straight episode from that San Diego area restaurant where a group of former military aviators meets every week to share stories. Until the last decade or so, Royce Williams was not authorized to share the story of what happened on November 18th, 1952. The South Dakota native had become a pilot during World War II. Now the Korean War was pressing on, but the one thing to be avoided at all costs was a direct war with the Soviet Union. Flying an F-9F-5 Panther, that's an early jet fighter, off the aircraft carrier USS Oriskany, he took off with three other planes in windy, snowy, blinding conditions as they were to provide a combat air patrol above their task force in the Sea of Japan. When they broke through the clouds, they spotted the contrails of seven Soviet fighter jets. We'll pick it up right there with 90-year-old retired Navy fighter pilot Royce Williams.
At that point, the flight leader, who was senior to me, had a problem with his airplane, and he was told to take his wingman and remain over the task force. And I took the lead of the flight with my wingman, a guy I had never flown with before, and pursued the, as they flew over the top of me, and they were at extreme altitude and all giving contrails, that smoke trail behind them, cloud trail. I identified them as MiGs, and they said, that's your target. When they flew over me, they reversed course and headed north. So I flew in that direction, getting further and further behind them, but climbing. And when they got to 26,000 feet, they split in two groups, 103 and 104, and turned in different directions, either to bracket me or decide to go and land or something, but I lost sight of them at that point. And so did the radar operator, so they gave me a command to come back and establish a barricade between the last sighting and the location of the task force. And in that turn, there came four of them in, and they were all shooting at us. And they missed, and as they went by, I kicked in a lot of rudder and wrapped the airplane around and dropped in behind their number four airplane. And with a short burst, he dropped out of the formation and started going down. I didn't know it right then, but my wingman left me and pursued the airplane going down. The others climbed in an amazing way, showing off their greater capability than anything I had.
So I want to understand here. At this point, your wingman has chased the other guy. You've already shot down one of the seven, but now you're up there one on six, and you just said their capability for the MiG was greater than your Panther. So you're one on six with an airplane that's inferior to theirs.
That's correct.
Did that hit you at the time, that the odds were not in your favor?
Well, I didn't plan on this. It was a complete surprise. And I just went on gut tuition and training, and I knew I was in the fight. I was actually told by the controller, do not engage, and I reported that we are engaged. I couldn't just turn tail and run. It wasn't my job, for one thing, and besides that, I probably for sure would have been shot down. So I pursued these three that I already had in sight, and they went high above me and then reversed and came in head on. And so I fired at the first one coming in, and he was shooting way out of range, and I fired where it was about in range, and he broke off, but his wingman came in, and I think I nailed him. He just came straight in and non-maneuvering and passed underneath me. And from then on, they were not formation. They were just taking their turns of the five airplanes left now and attacking. And my job was, I was a fighter pilot, and I knew how to maneuver against a lesser airplane. But the roles had been reversed, and I was now the target with superior numbers and better airplanes coming against me. So I was in a turning defensive fight. And they came in one after another, and I would just do what I could to spoil their aim. As they'd fly by, they did what they should have done, to put their nose up and just pull up, and I would not have the capability to do that with my plane to chase them. But in some cases, they made a mistake, and they went out ahead of me and turned flat, in which case I wrapped the airplane around and was able to get shots at them.
Had you ever had any kind of experience like this before?
Training. But my training was pretty much the role that they were playing against an adversary that was probably a multi-engine, slower or something like that, and I was in a more maneuverable airplane and kind of doing what these guys were doing now. But I was a reverse role.
So slowly but surely, over more than 30 minutes, you're picking off one plane at a time. 35 minutes engaged with 7 MiGs in this dogfight. How long did it feel like? Did it feel like longer than 35 minutes?
No, the time was sort of compressed. I was just busy and there was no time to just look around. I was doing a lot of looking, but then I'd see a guy on my tail and I had to counter him and then the next guy, and just went on and on until I finally I'd shot down another newbie because I could see the parts fly off him and I had to pull the airplane around to avoid hitting pieces of the airplane. Then I had another one smoking and I was trying to pursue him when I saw a MiG come in on my tail, and then trying to avoid him, he hit me with a 37 millimeter right in a vital part of the airplane and went through the wing and into the accessory section of the engine, and it just wiped out. I had cables to the rudder were shot away, and all the hydraulics were gone, and I basically just had an elevator as the control available to me. And he settled in behind me. I was out of ammunition at this point anyway.
So you're out of ammunition, and your plane's not working right.
Right. It was way out of trim and hard to fly. So I was using two hands on the control stick and heading toward the clouds. And this guy settled in right behind me at a perfect firing range. And he was just shooting, and I could see both the 23 millimeter and the 37 fly over me and under me as I was pushing over and pulling back and upsetting his aim. So he wasn't getting to me, and I got in the clouds and he lost sight of me. And I headed back to the task force.
And you're describing this story. You lived it. You've told this story a few times. Maybe it's... It's not
recently, because I was not permitted to talk about it. So 50-some years went by before I told anybody, and that included my brother or my wife or anyone.
Because this engagement was not to have occurred between American fighters and Soviet fighters?
Well, I suppose that was part of it, but I was told it was because this was the first engagement of a new authority and capability, NSA. Everybody knows it today, but this was its first operational mission. And it was aboard a cruiser, the Helena, right off Vladivostok. And with their sophistication and language capability, they had these guys from the time they took off from the field, the Soviet Army Air Force, and through the engagement, and they said until the remnant came back. And so they didn't want to disclose that we had something new in this capability.
Mm-hmm. So that was the first operational mission?
For the NSA operational group, the people that were on the special mission on this cruiser that were monitoring the Soviets.
Got it.
And they had the total picture of what happened. Mm-hmm. And they're the only reason that I knew how many airplanes I shot down. Other than that, I'd see hits and that sort of thing, but I didn't know how many actually were shot down.
You're just trying to survive. You're not keeping score.
That's right. So I didn't know. I have flash remembrances of a lot of it that all pales in, but later on after the Cold War, the Soviets, now the Russians, released the information, and I have the names of the four Soviet pilots that were shot down.
Is that a sobering thought to look at those names?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
But if those four weren't shot down, you would have been. in almost certainty, right? And you probably should have been.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'd say if God wasn't on my side, I'd be in the bottom of the ocean off Vladivostok.
Well, and really, I mean, we think about that. Here you've got, you know, you're outnumbered 7-1. They've got better airplanes. And then your plane is disabled and out of ammunition, and there's a guy right on your tail. In those moments, did you think that was it? Did you think there was any way you were going to escape that and survive?
Thinking is an odd thing to say, but I was just busy doing what I was doing, and I don't know, I suppose hope was built in, but I was just totally involved in doing the best I could. And I probably had an adrenaline high and shock after I landed, which was a feat in itself. But then I was talking to the chaplain later toward evening, and that's about the time it set in.
I imagine so, and you said something a moment ago that you had God on your side, and maybe the landing is one of these moments, but what are the moments along that way where you look back and say, yeah, God must have been looking out for me?
There's no doubt. It's sort of like David and seven Goliaths.
Haven't heard that version. And we haven't heard the whole story just yet. He wouldn't be talking to us today if he didn't find a way to land that crippled fighter jet. He'll walk us through that when we come back, not to mention a later landing during the Vietnam War that no one else had been able to pull off, one that helped identify and correct a major malfunction. For pictures and a link to a great article about Royce Williams from Homeland Magazine, go to hometownheroesradio.com or pull up Facebook and just type in Hometown Heroes Radio. We'll get the rest of his story right after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive. And then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.